Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Mornings podcast. Enjoy the conversation.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Let it rise.
Good morning, friends. Good morning, Rebecca. Good morning, Paul. Paul, thanks for that news update. It is, in fact, a very windy day here in the Twin Cities. Maybe windy where you are, but that really severe wind is not good, A, for my comb over, and B, when you're getting out of your car. Make sure when it's really, really windy that when you open your door, you just don't let it go, because sometimes that wind can pick it up and slam it into the car next to you. And that's kind of a scary thought and kind of, you know, not good. So make sure you hold on to that door when you open it just to make sure the wind's not going to carry it away. We have a great show today, and we're going to start today. I'd like to bring up Matthew 6 and talk about Matthew 6:33. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. What a great way to start the day, because that can eliminate a lot of worry. Because worry indicates that we've got something that we're thinking about, that we're dwelling on, and we just have to seek his kingdom and his righteousness first, and then everything will be kind of taken care of. There are more important issues than, you know, food and clothing and housing and entertainment, and there's nothing more important than Faith Radio Mornings with Bill Arnold. Oh, wait, did I say that out loud? I meant to say that. I was just thinking that. I didn't mean to say that out loud. But also worry indicates that maybe we're just struggling with our own self-image or, you know, remember God says you're more valuable than anything. You're the most precious thing ever. And worry will also give us a chance to think about, you know, that the way we think, and it creates a defective kind of way of thinking, because anxiety doesn't do anything to add time to our lives. It's kind of inefficient. It doesn't really work. So when you think about the way we think, remember that seek ye first his kingdom and his righteousness, and then everything else will be added. And also, when we're thinking about or worrying, it also might suggest that we're not trusting God and the promises that God gives us. So when we look at all the problems that we have in life, we should just remember that God loves us and God's in charge, and we have a purpose, and God gives us all a great purpose. And if we're taking care of obeying God and following his word and studying it, we're going to be happy, happy campers. And let's not worry about tomorrow. Let's just focus on today, because today has enough worries of its own. So let's just commit this day to God. Let's seek his kingdom first and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you. That is from Matthew 6:33. Anyway, we got a great show coming up. After the break, we're going to talk to Gabe Lyons. He's the director of Q Ideas. And how is the church engaging in culture? Are we making an impact? That's the big question we're going to address with Gabe. It is 7 minutes after the hour. Good morning. Thanks for being with us. Bill Arnold here. I'll be right back. Good morning. I know sometimes those words don't belong together, but I hope you're having a good start to your day. Bill Arnold here. I have Gabe Lyons on the phone. Gabe is the director of Q Ideas, a very great organization. Gabe, welcome to the show.
Hey, Bill. Good to be with you.
Thanks. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the repudiation of modern conservatism going on nowadays.
Well, I think we find a lot of things are being repudiated today, not only modern conservatism, but religion, faith, people, you know, having space to discuss their ideas and free speech. So there's a lot of division, a lot of divisiveness, a lot of things that seem to be really competing to separate us, and it creates quite an opportunity for the church to really step in and be a part of the solution and part of the healing that I think people are really longing for, and something our data shows is that people are truly wanting to see people come together versus be separated, even though when we watch the news or read the you know, newspaper reports or online on social media, it feels like man, that can't be true that people want to be united. It feels like they only want to be divided. But the reality is 3 out of 4 Americans say we really want to get along. We just need some leadership that can help us do it.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think we're doing in that department so far? How is the church engaging? I mean, how good do you think the church is engaging right now?
Well, I think there's sort of two stories happening with the church. You know, one is that some churches have sort of put the walls up even further to say, hey, we're going to kind of duck in and sort of avoid some of this, and we're just going to worry about our own people, and we're going to continue to be inward. And then there's another response that is saying, hey, we need to be outward. We need to be the church that shows up in the midst of some of these really difficult conversations and some of these difficult times that can be confusing and can be very political and can be, you know, really a space where, you know, people aren't sure anymore what they can trust, who they can believe. And the church shows up in that and actually demonstrates the love of Jesus to their neighbors, to the people around them, not really selfishly worried about the harm to themselves personally, but saying, I got to show up and care for my neighbor. And that's where I see a lot of the divide in the church, is that there's these two different responses, and there's a tension, because the first is one that's really motivated by, in some ways, a sense of fear of what's going on, what could happen, what about our children, how do we protect? And there's a healthiness to that, to just say, hey, we need to be thoughtful about our own and how we think about the church growing in discipleship. And of course, that should be a concern. But then on the flip side of that is churches saying, you know, we really need to lead with love and not let fear stand in the way of us showing up in some difficult circumstances. And I think we really see in the life of Jesus both of those things kind of playing out. One is to retreat, to go deep with the Father, to know who we are, to understand His word and what we believe and what we know to be true. But then the other is to go out to be those who are showing up and loving our neighbor, even when people might misunderstand it or confuse it with being liberal. Yet Jesus is very liberal with His love as He shows up in the midst of circumstances with the people around Him that many people would say, you know, from a religious perspective, oh, you need to avoid that completely.
Well, you sound so optimistic, which I love. I mean, it sounds that the church has really an opportunity here to step up and be bold and be loving. And there's so much polarization right now that is so obvious. And I think there's people that feel a little bit like if I step out and I get they write me off really fast, I'm going to lose an opportunity with them. So there is a kind of a mixture of fear with the mixture of us needing to be bold in a new way and a new fresh way, maybe.
Yeah, Bill, I think you nailed it. I mean, that's exactly what's happening. There's a real, in some ways, a sense of self-preservation happening.
Mm-hmm.
Some Christians, you know, are saying, hey, if I'm too courageous, if I'm too clear about what I believe or think or what I'm supposed to do in this situation, then maybe I'll lose an opportunity. And I think it's an important thing to take account of is who are we doing this for? You know, who's the audience, quote, mm-hmm. unquote, that matters? There's an audience of one, which is our Father and our love for Him, and that's what matters? Or is it that we're trying to put in human and natural terms what's going to matter, what's going to work, what's the strategy or tactic that's going to make me more effective and give me more influence down the road? And I think we have to be pretty careful trying to make those kinds of assessments, because we see throughout Scripture God's looking for faithful people, and it doesn't have to be a lot of them. He's looking for a few faithful people to stand in the gap, to be those he can count on, he can trust. And usually through that, he swings kind of the hinges of history sort of move in a way that you could never predict. And so I am encouraged about the opportunity for the church. I can't imagine a better moment to live as a believer in the midst of a setting where people are truly questioning what's true anymore. You know, the fake news, that whole discussion,
yeah.
What is truth? People are questioning, like, who can I trust? What is the meaning of life? Where do I gain my confidence in the future? Is it from government? Is it from a president? Is it from the institutions around me? Or is there something more that actually brings life and flourishing for us and our community? And I think the church can totally step into this moment and have answers to the questions people are really asking.
See, this is so encouraging, Gabe. I love your take on this, and I love your perspective, and I know you're encouraging our listeners, because a lot of the times you can feel like, I'm going to isolate a little bit. I'm going to withdraw. I don't want to get put into a conversation where they're looking for that gotcha moment, where they're going to try to write me off as fast as they can. Because, you know, if you're like me, and I know I am, you kind of want to get along with people. But you also have to stand bold for Christ. And so I appreciate your perspective. We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, more with Gabe Lyons, who's got to promptly leave the show at 6:25. So we're going to speed this up. Be back in a minute. Seventeen minutes after the hour, Bill Arnold here talking to Gabe Lyons. And Gabe, it seems like Christians are increasingly marginalized in the public square. So we're going to have to work twice as hard, I think, to help transform our communities and our cities. And that's going to take something more from us, isn't it?
Well, it is, and you're right. The research shows, and we've laid this out, David Kinnaman and I, the president of Barna, in a book we recently wrote about a year ago called Good Faith. We really try to make the case that bad religion is really what people are reacting to. Mm-hmm. The negativity people are rejecting is a religiosity, self-righteousness, a judgmentalness. I mean, this at this point, 46% of Americans think religion is part of the problem in our society. Which is an enormously high number.
Mm-hmm.
And in the midst of that, we have an opportunity, again, and the way you change that, Bill, is one-on-one. I mean, it's through friendship. It's through relationship. It's through getting to know the parents of your student at school, mm-hmm. your teacher. It's through your time with your neighbors. It's these basic things that if we just recover some of the basics, like what Christians have done over the last 2,000 years, which is we've been the best at extending hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
Like we host great dinners. We have people into our homes. We engage people, look them in the eye, and build friendship and relationship. And when we do that, we actually create an opportunity where those perceptions start to change. People start to feel comfortable. They start to realize that every Christian or evangelical isn't what it's been all cooked up to be in the media. And it actually creates a new opportunity for real life conversation. But you're right. We as a church have to step into the conversations, and there's many difficult ones to be having. And if we're not equipped and prepared to do that, then we do shy away from even bringing things up that are critical.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really, as you know, part of our work at Q is trying to help equip Christians to understand how to engage some of the most difficult conversations they're having today.
Gabe, might it be helpful and useful if we kind of figure out a way to dust off and recommit ourselves to our own story? Maybe that's a step we could take today, is saying let's look at our own story and make sure we're recommitting to that so we can go out and start having these one-on-one conversations with complete conviction.
Well, it's the one thing that we actually, in a post-Christian, kind of post-modern moment, the one thing you have the right to talk about is your story. And in that way, Bill, I mean, you're right. It's actually the way that you can share your faith, you can share what Jesus has done in your life, you can share the own challenges and ways sin has tripped us up personally, just by sharing our own story. And really, nobody is opposed to hearing your story. I think what we find is when we start to say, you know, that this is a larger narrative, when this is something everybody must live this way or think this way, even though we would believe that as Christians, that this would be good for everybody to live this way, when we start to project that onto people in kind of a groupthink way, there is a reaction to that that you avoid. When you share with somebody your very personal testimony, your encounter with Jesus, what that's meant in your own life, and people can ask you questions and interact, and it can be a beautiful way to actually encourage people, even if they don't decide to believe what you believe. I think that's part of the hope is, we want that, but we don't demand that. We don't need to close the deal. What we're trying to do is let the Spirit work through our own stories and through truth and let that start to penetrate people's heart and let the Spirit do the work that only the Spirit can do.
Mm-hmm. Gabe, do you have a story from your own life that when you start to share a piece of your own life really grabs people's attention? Something in particular?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think...
No, it's early.
Well, no. Rebecca and I both... we have found, you know, how God's in our own story. You know, 16 years ago, our son was born with Down syndrome, which we were young, 26, 27 years old, and weren't really expecting that. And that little piece of our story has been an unbelievable connection to so many people, both the somewhat, you know, the crisis of the moment of not expecting something and your expectations being shattered into something new, all seeing how God uses something in that in your life like this to draw you close and to actually remind you of what life's really about and to teach us through our son what unconditional love really looks like and where joy really comes from. So, you know, that little piece of our story, we've made so many friendships across this country with people who are parents of children with special needs. It's allowed us to engage in that community and try to solve problems that people are having, whether it's in the diagnosis moment where 9 out of 10 of these children are being terminated. And the parents find out that their child might have Down syndrome. We've been able to work on projects that help educate those new mothers and fathers to know really the life of these children and what good it's going to do. You know, all the way to just being able to encourage people who have children with special needs, which is a larger number in our population today. And as you speak about the church, what a great opportunity for the church right now. There's churches I know in that have developed entire wings of their children's ministry just for those with special needs or with autism, and they're trying to serve their communities around that piece of their story and finding parents who are saying, we've never had anything like this. We've never been able to go to church and just trust that we can drop our kids off and actually have space where they can be enjoying themselves and taken care of while we go receive spiritual nourishment with the body of Christ. So many opportunities can come out of just kind of going deep into the story God's kind of laid out for ourselves.
Wow. And I think it points out we are hungry to connect to others, and we're hungry to connect at places where we're broken. And the fact that you can reach out and your wife can reach out amongst the other people who have been dealing with your situation just makes it even a more beautiful thing. Gabe, one thing I'm going to remember from our talk this morning is the expression, recover the basics. I think that's really a great reminder for all of us. We have about 30 seconds left. I'd like to ask you about the Q conference coming up and what you can share about that.
Yeah, well, I'd love to invite the listeners to learn more about that at qideas.org/2017 for 2017. I mean, once a year we pull together 40 different leaders who are experts and thought leaders on the many topics and issues we're dealing with in culture, whether it's Islam, whether it's sexuality and gender questions, whether it's discussions around race, incarceration, the death penalty, what it means to really extend hospitality, what it looks like for us as Christians to really know our confession and know what we believe, but then to live it out in our industries and our vocations. So this is a conference that's been going now for over a decade, and we'll have about 1,800 leaders coming to Nashville, Tennessee, April 26 to 28. And I would love for your listeners to consider coming. Let the pastor know about it.
Absolutely.
It's a gathering where you can really get away and connect and learn and don't have to have all the answers, but can learn about how to engage these difficult conversations so we are more equipped and confident and bold with how faith and what God's Word says helps us apply to all of those situations. So that's at qideas.org/2017.
Thanks, Gabe. Have a great week. God bless you.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, thanks. 25 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us today. Bill Arnold, I'll take a short break and be right back. Good morning. The UConn women's basketball team are champions once again for the fourth straight year. They got a career-high 40 points from Katie Lou Samuelson. She's was on fire, and they crushed South Florida by a score of 100-44. In Pierre, South Dakota, two gun rights measures will soon hit with a veto from Governor Dugard. The vetoes will come despite the Senate passing the measures yesterday, with one gaining four more votes than the other. One proposal lets concealed carry holders enter the Capitol with their firearm, and the other bill doesn't require a permit in order to carry a concealed weapon. Yeah, that's kind of exciting news about gun control. And storms plow through Iowa, causing many tornado warnings. Many Iowa communities are assessing the damage after storms rumble through the state. Crazy weather this time of the year. We're going to take a little break. We're going to hear the news, and when we come back, we're going to talk to David Washington, he's a former gang leader, reaching Chicago's most dangerous neighborhoods. This is Bill Arnold. I'll be back in a minute. Rachel Cruz learned a lot about money from an early age, the daughter of financial expert Dave Ramsey. Rachel says it's important for parents to teach their kids the connection between work and money.
For parents, a great thing is not to be a human ATM, but to really let your kids figure out the work-money connection. And so yeah, and I think there's a balance to all of this, especially when we're talking about kids and money. You know, I think some parents can go to both extremes. You know, some, it's like a boot camp every single day, and it's like, no, they're kids, let them be kids. And then some parents just kind of forget about the subject of money and just let their kids float through life, and they learn no life lessons. And so finding that balance, I think, is important.
Well, you know, my mom gave me the money doesn't grow on trees line, you know, but then I said, Mom, what is money made of? And she said, paper. And I said, doesn't that come from trees? So that didn't go well. I think my allowance was cut then for about 6 months. But if you want to find that full interview, that's online at myfaithradio.com. We'll take a little break when we come back. I'm going to speak to Pastor David Washington, a Chicago area pastor, and how he's dealing and reaching Chicago's most dangerous neighborhoods. It's 35 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us.
Football has often been described as 22 men on the field who desperately need rest and 75,000 people in the stands who desperately need exercise. This is Jim Garlow. Contrary to popular opinion, Christianity is not a spectator sport. And you may be saying, but I'm just a layperson. Well, every believer is a minister. Everyone is involved. No matter how you react, the statement remains true. You may be surprised, alarmed, pleased, antagonized, suspicious, or enraged, as one person said. Nevertheless, he wrote, you are a minister of Christ. Repeat after me those words. I am a minister. Let's make that our tweet for the day. It may feel awkward at first, but you should refer to yourself as a minister. Why? Because that's what you are, or at least should want to become, and that's what the Bible sees you. Layperson and pastors are both ministers. God has called you to serve Him, to share His love with others. Partners in ministry. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Six minutes after the hour, last year in Chicago, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of young black men took out their guns and they shot each other. And there was, the city saw roughly 762 murders. That's way more than New York and Los Angeles. And that is far higher than the 2015 tally of 485. Much to say, violence is on the rise and it is dangerous. And there's a lot of gang activity on the south and west sides of the city. And what are we doing about it? I know for a fact that Pastor David Washington, my guest, is doing something very intentionally. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's talk about what's going on in your beloved city.
Well, I think a lot more is going on than what the news portrays. There are people doing good work in the community. There are people even coming out of gangs, coming out of drugs, and trying to make a difference in the city. But along with the violence, along with the shootings, there's a lot of political corruption throughout the state, throughout the city. And I think a culmination of all of those things is just giving people in the streets very few or seemingly few options of trying to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So they do what they know.
Mm-hmm. David, what's going on with the police force in the Chicago area right now? What's their mentality now?
I think the police is trying to, they're trying to get better at policing themselves.
Uh-huh.
They're trying to get better at relational community relationships and building trust in the community again. But there are a lot of officers who are still overly excessive in the way that they deal with people in the community. racial profiling is still an issue in the city. You know, the stop and frisk happens here a lot. And then even corruption with planting. When the police in our city, when the police can't catch someone that they seem to think are dealing drugs, they'll plant things on them to try to get them off the streets. And this is why there's a lack of respect for the police in general by most people in the community because of a few that are, you know, corrupt.
So, yeah, that makes it for a complete lack of trust. And, I mean, they don't trust each other to start with. And then let alone the stories of maybe planting drugs on suspicious people to get them off the street makes it even worse, doesn't it?
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about some of the things that some of the unintended consequences, like the tearing down of some high-rise projects a few years ago and how that can disperse gangs and how that affects the city.
Yeah, that was huge. Well, a number of things was huge. The tearing down of the high-rise project buildings was one. The closing of several hundred schools was another issue. The influx of drugs was another issue. And so all of these things were happening mid to late 90s, slowly, and it just culminated into a snowball effect. So another thing that I didn't mention is there were gang leaders in state. The way the gangs worked in the city, Chicago's gangs were unique in that they were very, very organized. A lot of them was even involved in the political process, which is why a lot of them were disbanded because they had the power to go to the polls. But once they took gang leaders who were leading the gangs on the streets from state institutions into federal institutions, they took them away from contact with people, then the gangs lost leadership. They lost organization. There used to be a time where you could speak to the right gang leader and you could stop crime in the whole area of the city. Mm. That day is gone.
Wow.
That day is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Then with the high-rise projects being torn down, thousands of people were put into systems and communities and spaces that were new. Some of them were rival areas, and so that brought the violence up. And with the influx of drugs, that brings the type of capital into the community where people didn't have to respect rules and respect leadership, access to weapons and guns and high-powered assault rifles, and all of that began to happen in the late 90s. So when we come into the 2000s, just the murders just started piling up higher than we ever seen.
David, what kind of drugs right now are being primarily used in the communities and in the gangs?
Anything you can think of.
Okay.
Anything you can think of, they're doing. They're self-medicating.
Okay.
They're doing the crack. They're doing the heroin. They're doing the ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's big now is over-the-counter prescriptions. People are just taking anything that they feel would get them high.
Wow.
Just codeine.
Yeah.
Cough syrup medicine.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing it all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stronger drugs are being used today, drugs that causes people to hallucinate. Another effect of the issue with the drug epidemic coming into the city is during the 90s, you were having a lot of babies who were born under the effects of those drugs. And years ago, I was a youth pastor. I had several young people who had mental illness and had issues because they were born drug babies, and then they become drug addicts.
Sure.
You know, so they have mental issues, they have drug addiction, they hallucinate on the drugs. So a lot of the violence is not like it was in my day where, you know, you had a problem with someone. It was rational. you weren't trying to hurt people that you wasn't trying to hurt. But today is not rational. The younger people in this generation, they're not thinking. They're picking up their guns. You know, the hip-hop music is glorifying the drugs, glorifying and killing people, and it's fueling this fire that we're trying to put out here in our city.
You know, David, I've done a lot of prison ministry in my past, and I talked to an older inmate who said, you know, the younger generation, their conscience is seared. They don't have a sense of right and wrong. You know, they'll rob a convenience store and get $43 and shoot the guy in the head on the way out for kicks. And he said, it gets more and more scary because they come in without any sense of right or wrong. And I want to take a little break, but when I come back, I want to hear a little bit of your story, because when you talk about self-medicating, you're a guy who, as a kid, 14, 15, got caught up in the gangs. You're just a kid, David. You're missing your little boyhood there. So when you start self-medicating, no surprise. So when we come back, I want to hear that story, and I want to hear about how the gospel is transforming gangs in the Chicago area. It's 45 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us today. Bill Arnold here, talking to David Washington. Be back in a minute. Forty-seven minutes after the hour, talking to Pastor David Washington. He grew up in a pretty dangerous environment. He's got involved in gang activity around 14, 15, right around there. And there's a cute line, David, talking about in your home, you were the fifth of six kids. And the Washington family was more church attenders than practicing believers. And the more you got involved with gang activity, the less you went to church. And the less you went to church, the more your mom and dad went to church, seeking God to help save you. I think that's a very, very cute. But you got involved at a very young age. So what was that like?
Well, you know, it was a sense of belonging.
Yeah, of course.
It's a subtle thing. You know, it's a subtle thing. During the 70s, the early 70s, when I was growing up, we were in the midst of a community that had racial tension. Blacks were moving into the community. A few Latinos was moving into the community. Roseland, as many people may know, was like Dutch, Swedish, you know, immigrants, and, you know, the big white flight was happening. People were moving out as minorities were moving in, and it's a very segregated territory, and it began with people forming groups to belong to, you know, for protection, because people, different communities would fight with one another. And as the community became more dominated by African Americans, there were different sects of African American groups or gangs at that time. The intent of the gangs were not to just be, you know, violent gangs, but to be for social organizing of the community. That's one of the reasons why the gangs were so organized in the city, because they had rules to live by, they had ideologies to live by, and they were trying to make things better. But it ended up becoming distorted. It ended up being fighting people because they weren't with you. And how I got involved in that is, if you grow up in a particular part of the community that was Gangster Disciple, which was the gang I was a part of, then that meant you was associated by them. So if enemies coming in the neighborhood to deal with Gangster Disciples, they just coming into the neighborhood to deal with whoever is out there. They're not trying to hear you not gangbanging. They're gonna jump out on you. And so you associate yourself with your community because you are a part of the community. And the problems of the community become your problems. So I kind of gradually slid into it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It just became more aggressive as I aged.
Yeah. Well, this little description about you getting more involved in the gangs, your mom and dad getting more involved in the church, also includes what happened at your going away party. I was reading this article in the Gospel Coalition, and it says that your gang is throwing you a going away party because you're going to be sentenced and sent to prison, and you're looking around this room going, uh-oh, the future does not look bright in this room, and you became you got saved.
Yeah. So I was a leader. I was a first chief of the Gangster Disciples. All my guys, you know, I had a lot of legal problems. I've been arrested many times, you know, aggravated kidnapping, armed robbery, drug cases, gun cases, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting ready to do a plea deal to go to jail for 15 years and get out perhaps 7 years. The day that I was supposed to arrange that was the following day. I had been in court for probably almost a year,
mm-hmm.
dealing with the issue and wanted it to be over. Otherwise, I could have got worse time than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of my friends realizing I had court and that I wasn't coming back, they just said, you know, let's get high, let's hang, let's kick it. They threw a party. Which was supposed to be for me. And, you know, I noticed things like some of my friends trying to get with my girl, like, she gonna be gone. So
mm-hmm.
what's up, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I began to see the disrespect and the lack of loyalty. And so I just left really quick because I felt like I was gonna, I really felt like murdering somebody,
mm-hmm.
to be honest. And so I said, let me leave before I get into more trouble
mm-hmm.
than I want to get into. And so I tried to make myself feel better by getting high, the self-medication I was. But no matter how much I did, I just wasn't feeling high. And I looked at my face in the mirror and realized it was like my life flashed before my eyes. I remember being in church as a child. I remember, you know, when things weren't as bad as they had gotten. And I said, you just threw your whole life away for dudes who don't care about you, you know. And that sent me to a place of hoping really bad that I can get out of my situation. But knowing nothing in reality could get me out of it, no one could help me to get out of the situation. So I was hoping that God existed, you know. I wasn't sure, but I was hoping.
Because mm-hmm.
I said, if God exists, he can do it. He's the only one who can do it. And
amen.
So my prayer, I made a plea deal with God instead of the Lord.
Yeah, how'd that go?
And I said, Lord, what I'm going to do, I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into the prison and I'm not going to claim my gang. Whatever repercussions I have to deal with, I'll deal with it.
Wow.
But I'm not going to claim this anymore. And I said, I'm going to read this book, and I'm going to do to the best of my ability everything it says. If you don't get me out of jail in a year, then no one can ever tell me that there's a God that exists.
Hmm.
And God blew my mind. I didn't even go to jail at all.
Oh, my goodness.
I ended up getting probation. And it was by a series of miraculous things.
Mm-hmm.
One of my enemies, the victim, did not show up to court to do that deal. The arresting officer did not show up to court to do that deal. My probation officer, I had violated my probation. He did not show up that day. So it was like I was the only one in court. And so the judge just lowered my sentence to where I can get probation. He gave me probation and 200-plus hours of community service. I was on house arrest for the first year, and I did all of my community services at Salem Baptist Church in Chicago. It was there that I met the Lord. It was there that I was nurtured in the faith. After I finished serving my community service hours. I was hired by the church to work there. Never went back to the streets again. I didn't go back the same way. I went back, but yeah. I didn't go back the same way. I went back like Moses to bring others out.
Mm.
But that's the story. That's how it happened.
David, this story makes me so happy. I got a big smile on my face right now. I just love you. Thank you for sharing it with our listeners. It's a story I never, ever, ever get tired of, where God reaches down and redeems someone from a life that only he can change. So the transformation is so powerful, and I appreciate the work you're doing in Chicago and the way you're using taking the gospel to gangs to try to combat all the problems and the violence. I just pray blessings on you today and your work, and thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you for sharing this story, because other people need to hear it.
Yeah.
They need to know that they can come out of these things.
Okay.
So thank you.
Have a great day. It's 56 minutes after the hour. We'll take a little break and be right back. Today on Connecting Faith, finding solutions for complex neurological problems is a part of daily life for brain surgeon Dr. Lee Warren. And next on Connecting Faith, he'll invite us to look into our minds and nervous system and see God's amazing design for us. He'll talk about his book, A Peek Under the Hood, A Brain Surgeon's Look at Life. We celebrate the ability to listen, learn, and grow. That's on the next Connecting Faith. And today on Live the Promise with Susie Larson, Michael Card is going to be on the show, The Gospel of Wisdom. And then Dan Allender, The Healing Path, joins Susie in the second hour. So it's going to be a great day on Faith Radio here. We'll take a little break. When we come back, we've got Dr. David Stevens coming up from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. And then later in the hour, big surprise coming up. Stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to this conversation from Faith Radio Mornings. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings. Also, take a moment to subscribe to this podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a show.